Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This is part two of my interview with Preston Beckman. He is a media consultant, also the chairman of the Beckman Group, and for 20 years was at NBC during the must-see TV era, and 15 years at Fox. You also may know him on Twitter as the Masked Scheduler. We're talking about the state of the industry, the ever-changing state of the industry. And when we last left our heroes last week, and if you missed last week, after you listen to this, go back and check that out. But we're talking about comedy and the lack of comedy on broadcast networks. What is the future of sitcoms? Also, what is the future of sports, of streaming, programming, strategies, Tubi, all kinds of things get discussed in this next half-hour segment. So that's this week. Preston Beckman right here on Hollywood and Levine. Now, networks are always concerned, well, single camera, multi-camera, are multi-cameras dead, etc. And I contend that for a large part of the audience, maybe 80 or 90% of the audience, they don't care whether it's single camera or multi-camera. They're not going, oh my God, it's multi-camera. They do recognize bad laugh tracks.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, that is a turnoff.
Yes.
But if, you know, look at some of the most successful shows ever and shows that are, you know, enduring, like Friends are just a multi-camera retro show, but the audience was really laughing and the jokes were really funny. I don't think the audience goes, oh my God, there's four cameras instead of one. I can't enjoy this.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I think the difference is that single camera usually allows the creators to be a little more dramatic. I guess, I mean, it's a little bit more film-like. So with the single camera, you start to get, one can get away from the funny a little bit and get into the dramedies and the sadities and the warmities and the, you know, we're making a little film here. We're not making funny. Whereas with multi-camera, until you get into the really bad laugh tracks, you're making something where the audience is constantly being told, you know, you're supposed to be laughing at this. I'm not going to force you to laugh at it, but there are laughs here. And if you have the right show, like a Seinfeld or Friends or Roseanne, you know, those laughs are authentic and they're real and you're laughing along with the audience as opposed to being told you should be laughing.
Right, right. And audiences want to laugh.
Yes.
And I think there is sort of an expectation if you're going to watch a sitcom that you want to laugh. And it's interesting to me that some of these shows, especially more so like on the streaming networks, you know, where they're basically a drama and there'll be a couple of sort of funny moments or amusing moments, and yet they build themselves as a comedy.
Right. And then there are some single camera that are hilarious, mm-hmm. like What We Do in the Shadows. This weekend, we watched the first two episodes of Hacks. Mm-hmm. And we were cackling. I mean, it's hilarious. There's a show called Working Moms on Netflix, which is funny. So it's, mm-hmm. it's not necessarily that you need the laugh track. And you're
the
right.
Upshaws on Netflix.
Yeah, it's a little simplistic. I'm just saying with single cameras, with multi-camera, you have less opportunity to get dramatic. And by the way, when you do, it's usually could be very, very effective.
Yeah, we did on Cheers. We did it on Frasier.
Yeah, with this, you suddenly you're not hearing the left; you're hearing the silence,
mm-hmm.
and you're silent, and so it works both ways.
We had a moment in the first year of Cheers. And the coach's daughter, where the coach says something very poignant to his daughter.
Yes.
And the audience saw that as a joke, and it got a huge laugh from the audience. We took the laugh out.
I remember that episode.
Yeah. We took the laugh out because it interfered with the emotional content of the scene. And that was more important to us than getting a big laugh.
Yes. Right. You got enough of them. Cheers.
Yeah, exactly.
You could afford to give one up.
Well, one thing about comedies, as opposed to our dramedies or dramas, they're cheaper. So you would think I put a pin in that and say, if you have a big hit show like Big Bang Theory and you're paying enormous above the line to everybody involved, then yes, it's really expensive. But just generally, Call Me Cat has to be cheaper than 9-1-1 to make.
Right. What you have to hope for is you get something where like a Two Broke Girls, for instance, just to throw one out, where the cast is relatively unknown. They're not making a lot of money, and you have them tied up for 2 or 3 years before you have to start paying. And by that point, there might be a few of them. You go, well, you're gonna die in a kitchen fire, and you can replace some people with But once you get to the Big Bangs and the Friends and the Seinfelds, they are not cheap. By season 4, 5, 6, they're just not.
Now, the way the model used to be is that, it's expensive, but once you have 100-plus episodes, you're going to sell off to syndication, and you're going to make tons and tons of money on the show going forward. But that model has kind of changed now, too, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it's just to follow up for 1 second on the cost of the hits. The way, as someone who scheduled two networks, the way you made money off of the hits was by the shows behind them. So in other words, if you had a Cheers and then you had a Wings was a decent show and back in the day, when people didn't watch linear, Wings would get a huge rating. And I mean, the way we made our money at NBC was those 8:30 and 9:30 satellite shows, which were far cheaper than the expensive shows. But when you're selling in the upfront, you don't go, well, this cost $3 million an episode and this cost $8 million an episode, so I'm going to charge you four times. It doesn't work like that. So that's how you make money. But you asked me another question, and I...
The model has changed.
Yes, yes.
And it used to be that, when you made 100 episodes, you crossed the River Jordan and everybody got wildly rich and everybody was able to buy their own planes. Now that's not the case. Now the local independent stations are saying, why are we spending all this money for Seinfeld when you can see it on 14 other platforms?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the business now. I mean, you don't wait any longer. I mean, you go right from airing on broadcast to streaming in some capacity, whether it's like a Hulu is the next day, if you think about it. Hulu's kind of replaced the DVR. things, you know, a year, the CW model with Netflix, which has just changed, but was okay after a year, it's on Netflix, their shows. A lot of shows come on right before the next season. That's what Better Call Saul does, shows mm-hmm. like that. So it's a very different world that we live in now. And now we're getting into the fast channels where, again, you know, stuff that used to go to syndication now winds up on Tubi or winds up on Freevee, Amazon Freevee, or things like that. So the whole business is changing like that. So there's no syndication has become kind of irrelevant. And, mm-hmm. You know, the shows that go into syndication are the big, big hits, you know, like the Sun, you know, but anything less than that, you're just not going to bother.
Let's talk about Tubi for a second. I believe that's Fox that owns yes. Tubi, right? Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. They have a different model in that all of their stuff is free, but they're commercial based.
Correct.
And they're doing very well, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people don't mind commercials, you know, and they, and
like
they,
it's free. The exactly, content is free. Yeah,
exactly. And I was going to say, they're not paying $15 a month. You know, the number one rule of television is there are only 24 hours in the day. And that's been true in the 1950s when it started, and it's true to this very day.
Was that true in the Middle Ages? I'm not sure.
Well, there wasn't television back then.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it's that's how much there is. And you can't, so if I don't want to pay, everything is, and well, the other thing is everything's going to wind up free at some point. Another, by free, I mean, you know, if you want to pay for a premium channel, those things will wind up somewhere where you're not going to pay. And there's enough product out there where I can wait until something's cheaper or I don't have to pay for it while I'm catching up on all the other things. I'm sure you, like me, you know, I have a list of 30 or 40 shows that I go, okay, at some point I'll get around to seeing those shows,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's not like it's not FOMO for most people, you know,
right.
where it's like, oh, my God, if I don't, you know, usually – like Better Call Saul is a show I have to watch the day it comes, but that's the only one. You know, everything else I'll either wait a while or whatever. Even like, you know, the streamers are now trying to figure out the difference between binging and dropping weekly, and I'm sure that's still something that's, you know, being worked out. You know, will I watch a show like Hacks every week? Or do I want to hold on to them and wait until they all drop and then sit down and watch them all? You know, those are issues that are happening now among the streamers. But yeah, but Tubi, I mean, again, there's enough stuff there and it's cheap. They don't pay a lot for what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you hear of it and you've never heard of it and you go, well, I'm not paying for it. Same thing with Freevee TV. And you're going to see more and more of those sorts of things where it's like, I'll get there and, here's five comedies I never got around to watching, or here's a bunch of movies that I always wanted to watch. And okay, I'll sit through the commercials and it's more lucrative because you can't fast forward through them.
That's right. Well, but at least the commercials on Tubi seem to be at kind of a minimum. Mm-hmm. I, too, am a huge Better Call Saul fan, mm-hmm. and I record it and then yes. watch it and just fast forward through the commercials. And a few weeks ago, I was in New York and didn't have the benefit of that, but I wanted to see yeah. Better Call Saul, so I watched it live. Oh, my God, what an ordeal. And I'm thinking to myself, if I'm an advertiser, why do I want to spend anything more than $42 to be the eighth commercial in a 5-6 minute commercial block? Nobody is watching.
You mean live or fast?
Live, yeah. Or if it's live, okay, you go into a commercial break And I bet you 80% of the audience, they now know, oh, okay, this is going to be like one of those five-minute things. They go to the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
They surf. They check their email. It's like they're not sitting there watching your commercial.
Yeah, but if you're looking at your phone, or even if the kitchen is near where your TV is, you're hearing the commercial. That's really what's important. You're still getting more people that way than any other way. I'm not saying it's perfect. I have not watched Better Call Saul and seen, well, I've seen the commercials, but I'm fast forwarding through them. But still, I mean, even when you're fast forwarding through commercials, you're kind of like, oh yeah, that's that. Sometimes it's just reminding you the names of things, or you see the commercials so many times that, you know, it's like, if you've seen it once, as you're fast forwarding, you're just remembering what the commercial was. You're not seeing it, but your brain is going, oh yeah, I know the slogan. I know the this. I know what it is. So,
well, that's true. But I'm sure there's been research studies to show if there is a commercial block and there are 12 commercials in a 6-minute block, that if you are the first commercial or the second commercial, you're going to have a lot more impact than if you're 8 or 9 or 10.
Okay. I'm going to counter that.
Okay.
Because I do fast forward through commercials,
mm-hmm.
A lot of times I'll go beyond, right? In other words, I stop and I'm like 10 seconds into the show. So what I'll do is I'll go back 30 seconds and I'll see the last commercial.
Okay.
And I'll go, you know what? Now, what a lot of networks do, which is a mistake kind of, is that last thing they show you is a promo for another one of their shows.
Mm-hmm.
They should actually put a commercial there.
Mm-hmm.
So this way, when you go back, which I believe, again, show of hands, your audience, a lot of people, do.
I do that too, but my back skip is 10 seconds. So I just get the end, you know, of, you know, side effects could include death. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. But what I'm saying is, you know, that last commercial is sometimes, it all depends on the show and, you know, how you're trained to know when it's going to go into a commercial break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watch a dirty little secret. My wife and I watch 90 Day Fiancé. And if you watch it, you know exactly when they go to commercials because they always say coming up. So you go, okay, mm-hmm. You know, so there's nothing I'm going to see here that I'm not going to see when it comes back. And they always end with a promo for another one of their shows. So I know once I see that promo, I'll go, okay, even though I'm doing 30 seconds at a time, I'll go, okay, I know if I go another 30 seconds, I'm going to be, not that there's anything on 90 Day that's worth but you know, my point is that there are cues that most people have for the shows that they watch. And I say one cue at the end of a commercial break is it's usually a promo for a show on that network.
Yeah. Well, I drive my wife crazy because whenever we start watching a show, I will go, and now. And now Jeopardy. Yeah. And now Hacks. Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, we tuned it in.
Your discretion advised.
Yeah. So Netflix, about a month or so ago, had this huge crash in the stock market.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of liken it to the dot-com phrase where you knew at some point the bubble was going to have to burst. They're spending billions and billions and billions and billions on all of these shows, and you're figuring, well, they can't be making much more money than what they're spending. And now people are starting to say, well, maybe streaming isn't the answer. That isn't the model. What is your take on the whole Netflix situation?
Well, I remember when I think it was Disney pulled the Marvel shows from Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Because Netflix used to have, you know, Daredevil and all those shows.
Right.
And I remember thinking that, well, that's the beginning of the next transformation, which is, well, if Netflix can stream, why can't I? You know, and I started to realize that if you own programming and you can't figure out how to monetize it in your own, on your own streaming service, you got a problem. So I felt that at some point Netflix had to realize, well, the gravy train, the ride is over in terms of buying or other entities seeing Netflix as where they park their programming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've seen.
Mm-hmm. You know, slowly, they lost slowly. Friends as well. And
everything.
Other
yeah.
big hits. Yeah.
Everything is coming home,
mm-hmm.
in a matter of speaking. And Netflix at that point realized that, well, the only way we're going to survive is by making original programming. So, you know, it started with a drip, like shows like House of Cards and Barnes is the New Black. And it would, Netflix was kind of seen as the quality streaming network. And, you know, this is where you go for the high end stuff to what they are now, which is international crime shows and detective shows. And they, so Netflix strategy, to me, at least as an outsider, was bulk. In other words, I don't care if it's good or not. I just have to buy up everything I can from all over the world. So that when you come to Netflix, you're bombarded with programming to the point where you almost, sometimes you throw up your hands and you go, I'm going to go over to Discovery Plus, or I'm going to go over to HBO Max, because there's just too much here. And they don't do a very good job of telling you what anything is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they got to that point. And then at some point, they realized that they're spending all this money and they're really not what they used to be. It's really just, it's everything starts to just look cheaper. And a lot of people, there's a lot of people, especially in this country, don't like watching dubbed shows, who don't like watching subtitled shows.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, and ironically, the stuff that I think works best on Netflix is the stuff you can get on broadcast homes, you know, like a show like Virgin River, which can easily, there's a bunch of female skewing shows on Netflix that are no different than what the broadcast networks put on, or what some of the basic cable channels put on. So they don't, they've lost a lot of their uniqueness. They're just like a, they're like Amoeba Records, I guess, of streaming. It's like you walk in there and you're assaulted by, holy shit, look at all these, how much, look at all these albums, you know. And it's the same thing with Netflix. And you know, they were legitimate alternatives. You know, Disney Plus is a legitimate alternative. Hulu, even, you know, in some ways, Hulu has, and all of them have as much quality, if not more quality, programming than Netflix has. You know, Netflix in many ways has gotten out of the high end quality stuff. They'll do some big shows like a Stranger Things, but they're not doing the Orange is the New Black or the House of Cards, which is what got them on the map, I think. So I don't think, and the other thing is, as we talked about with Tubi, and I actually pat myself on the back for this, after I retired, I was on a panel on audience measurement, and I said on the panel that Netflix was going to eventually get into the advertising business and sell ads.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody, I got poo-pooed for that. And then a colleague, a friend of mine who's in research also, and I actually infiltrated Netflix, and we pitched them the idea, this is about 5 years ago, the idea of fast channels. We didn't call them fast channels.
What are fast channels?
Oh, fast channels are free advertiser-supported television. It's basically, if you go on like Freevee TV or what was called IMDb TV, there are channels. So in other words, you're not watching a show, you're watching a channel.
Right. I see. So there could be like a whole channel of Wings episodes.
Yeah.
Right?
Or it could be Paramount Comedies, uh-huh, or whatever. You know, it could be channels where you basically go to the channel there in wrestling. I'm involved with wrestling promotions. If you go to the channel, there's like a Impact TNA wrestling channel. So you go there and you'll see current matches, and you'll see historical stuff, and you just basically, it's more lean back rather than lean forward. You turn it on and you watch, you know, you watch it. And there were commercials. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we pitched the idea to Netflix of, why don't you have a mystery channel? Why don't you have a comedy channel? Why don't, where you can show the first episodes of your show. So if somebody says, I like mysteries, I'll go on to Netflix Mystery and I'll start watching. Maybe, and if I see something, you know, you have something on there where you hit a button or whatever, and you go and you subscribe to that show. So, and again, it's not who we are. Well, that's who they are now. So,
They got to figure out who they are. And yeah, I just read a thing, a few days ago, saying that they're considering live streaming shows.
You mean sports?
Sports, well, not just sports, but like an American Idol type of competition type of show. So the audience could participate and, again, call in real time.
Yes, we actually, again, don't want to sound arrogant, we went into Netflix with a singing with, I won't go into details, a singing competition show. We pitched them. And when we went in, I said to the people I went in with, we have to think about who they are. In other words, we pitched the show to NBC and ABC, and then Netflix showed some interest. And I said, we can't go in there and pitch this the way we would pitch this to a broadcast network. We have to think of it as a hybrid of something that people can watch at their on their own pace and something they need to watch immediately. So, yeah, that will all happen. I mean, I know you follow me on Twitter. I mean, I'm a strong believer that everything regresses to the mean, that everything that broadcast television has done over its history, the streamers can go, well, you know, now that I think about it, that makes sense for us. You know, it doesn't seem that, you know, commercials, okay, live, okay, you know, broad appeal, okay.
Now, in an attempt to sort of separate themselves from the pack, Amazon has spent an awful lot of money to get into the NFL. And it seems to me that the NFL has been the gateway to success, that when a broadcast network doesn't have the NFL, like NBC, when they lost it for a while to Fox, that they're really suffering. So it's like, for Amazon to get the NFL, to me, is a big deal, isn't it?
I don't know if they're going to make any money off of it.
Right.
But it's, again, it's in a way, it's a status symbol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm living in the gated community now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they can use it to promote their other shows. They'll figure out ways maybe where they can, during commercials, you can buy stuff
mm-hmm.
on Amazon. But it's a way of, and it's also the NFL kind of saying, okay, you know, we acknowledge you, we're aware that you guys exist, and as we go down the road, we'll think of other. We might be open to deals with other streaming services. Professional wrestling is the same way. I mean, you know, the deal that the Peacock made with the WWE, it's a big deal. It really is to fans of the show, for Comcast to basically say, we want to be the home of the WWE. And, you know, wrestling is another one of those sports that wherever there's a new iteration of media, that's what you see it there. Whether it was local television, pay-per-views, basic cable, streaming, it's always part of it. So, will I watch the games on Amazon? I think they'll probably get some of the less interesting games. But if the Giants are playing, I'll watch. Just like if the Mets are on, Apple or Peacock or wherever the heck you find these games now. You know, you search them out. The fans will search them out.
Well, I find it interesting that Peacock and Apple TV both have deals with Major League Baseball.
Yes.
And the Apple Friday night games are absolutely atrocious.
That's a compliment, actually.
Yes, absolutely. It's just an embarrassment.
Yes.
And the Peacock, with sort of the NBC oversight, Jason Benetti as their announcer and everything, the camera work, everything about the Peacock Sunday morning broadcast, even though they're on at a ridiculous time. I'm sitting here in the West Coast watching baseball at 8:30 in the morning. It's like I should be in Hawaii. But those are really well-mounted games. I wonder, okay, is that going to make a difference to fans?
Well, you know, it's a testament to the importance of having a sports pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will, in the sense that after watching, I did, out of curiosity, watch the first, watch the first game on Apple, and I mm-hmm. said, never again. I said, I don't know, watch this crap, you uh-huh. know? Whereas I thought, and I was wrong, I was actually looking forward to this Sunday on Peacock because I thought the Mets were on, because the way they were talking, Howie Rose was just talking about how with Peacock doing the games, Major League Baseball has changed the start times of mm-hmm. all the other
games. Yeah,
but I thought the Mets were on Peacock, so I was actually looking forward to seeing, oh, are they going to have Keith? Are they going to have Gary? Ron, who's going to be the announcer? I think it's a very smart thing to have somebody from each team, because in a way it creates a little bit of conflict between the analysts. So I'll watch a game on Peacock, even if it's not the Mets, but there's no way I will watch Apple. And even with football, you know, I think unless it's a meaningful game, and a lot of those games on Amazon are probably not going to be, I haven't seen the schedule, are probably not going to, they're going to be Jacksonville Jaguars versus the, you know, Carolina Panthers or something.
Greatest rivalry in sports. What are you talking?
What do I know? I'm not going to make the effort. Whereas when it was on Fox, I would make the effort. Just because, okay, it's easy. Boom. now I got to go, man, you know, and why to watch that game? Nah.
Do you ever foresee a day when the Super Bowl will be behind a paywall?
I see a day where the Super Bowl can be augmented behind a paywall. In other words, NBC has the game. Well, yeah, I guess NBC. NBC has the game, and you go to the Peacock, and for $10, and maybe they've done this already, $10, you get the sidelines, mm-hmm. or you get some kind of enhanced viewing of the game.
You get to play.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Or you get, you know, if it's on ABC Network, you get the Manning cast on ESPN Plus for $10. I see I see ways in which you can augment live sports with some bonus that hardcore fans might go, $10, I'll, you know, be fun to watch it that way. Where you get all the same commercials, you know, the center is that, but you do get the sidelines or you get something. Obviously, you got to be careful because you don't want the other team watching it and finding out the play calling.
Yeah.
you got to be careful about some of those things. But there's ways to. So I think you'll see augmented. I think you'll see things like enhanced sports viewing will become a regular thing.
And final question. In the past, it has always been a pendulum, like back and forth. You know, a comedy's dead in 1981, and then Cheers and Cosby, and all of a sudden, you know, there's 14 comedies on every network. Do you think comedies will come back?
Yeah. I'm old enough as are you, to remember to see these swings. I mean, I don't think it's like, does comedy come back? I think it takes a comedy.
Right. Just like a hit drama.
Yeah. It takes something to say, okay, it's not even that they've reinvented, but you know, okay, this person's touched the, this show has touched the nerve, and let's do more of them. You know, television is the greatest form of flattery, or imitation is the greatest form of television, I should say. In other words, it's always been the case that when something works, everybody runs to that side of the boat. And then when you all run to that side of the boat, it's not all going to be that good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes years. I mean, as I said, you know, Lost revived science fiction until everybody realized running to that side of the boat, it's not science fiction.
Right. You know? And how many faux friends were there over like a 10-year period?
Well, Wild Oats. If you remember when the same year Friends came out, Fox did a comedy called Wild Oats, which mm-hmm. was exactly Friends. And mm-hmm. one bombed and the other became a mega hit. So it's right. the same thing with The Cosby Show. You know, they're not all going to work. But I think what it takes is, I don't think anything's dead until somebody walks into, whether it's a network, whether it's a cable channel, whether it's a streaming service, and pitches something. And there's an executive there smart enough to say, you know what, this could be the one. You know, this could be the one that brings this, revives this. Same thing with game shows. Remember, they went away for a while, and mm-hmm. then all of a sudden, I can't remember which one it was, but they came back. Oh, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? You know, that suddenly becomes. And again, I'll keep saying this. It's, you have to understand why it worked. You know, I mean, I remember when Who Wants to Be, that it was, the reason why it worked was it was ordinary people in extraordinary situations. And then a show, Heroes, came along, which seemed like it had nothing to do with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but we did some focus groups on that. Ordinary people in extraordinary situations. So it's always about understanding deeper. What is it? What is this touching in people? It's a game show, but it's not really a game show. It's a science fiction show, but it's not really a science fiction show. What is it doing? I'm curious to see how Quantum Leap performs. Because mm-hmm. Quantum Leap was another one of those shows that was science fiction, but it wasn't really science fiction.
No, it really wasn't.
An
anthology more than anything else.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that show.
Okay. So what was Cheers?
Cheers was what I call the thing about Cheers. It's just the same thing about Friends, is people together versus people. Comedy is where it's about people who already know each other, care about each other. And then an element is introduced. But Friends, Cheers starts with a bunch of people hanging out at a bar. Oh, mm-hmm. well, I hang out at a bar. You know, I can hang out at a bar. They all seem to like each other. They're interesting characters. As opposed to what I call people apart shows, which are really premise pilot, comedy pilots, you got to set it up. So the setup might be good. Usually those shows end with wait at the end. Somebody, you know, after you set up things, somebody leave and go, wait. Or, well, maybe we can work this out. And when I would see those pilots when I was in the business, I would go, I have no idea what the show is. Because, you know, you basically did a little play and you set it up. Now they're together. But I have no idea, as opposed to Friends, bunch of people sitting around. If you think about Friends and Cheers, they start the same way. One's in a bar, one's in a coffee shop.
Right.
They know each other. A foreign element was introduced.
Right. Well, I remember there was a period of time when networks did not want premise pilots.
Yeah.
And it became very unwieldy because it's like, okay, Samantha and Darren are dating. But they got a bat. And then remember the time I didn't know you were a witch, and you did it. And eventually the network just said, okay, go back.
That's also a high concept.
Yeah.
that's a little different than real people, as opposed to witches and Martians and Alf and things like that, where, you know.
Alf was high concept? I didn't realize.
there'll be dissertations written about Alf.
By the way, Alf is funny.
It was hilarious.
I came across one of those in the middle of the night, and I just started watching it, and I found myself laughing.
Well, I was at the, since it's Upfront Week, I was at one of Brandon Tartikoff's marathon Upfront presentations, which he used to do with the Waldorf in New York. And the year that Alf came on the schedule, Alf was there, and he was up in the balcony somewhere, and he and Brandon did like a 5-minute routine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those were the showmanship days.
Yeah, those days were a lot more fun.
Yeah, today I think Fox isn't even announcing a schedule, but I understand why. But then they say, "Oh, well, we'll put some shows on. Don't worry,
right.
We'll fill up 15 hours."
Right. Well, Preston, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Ken.
Really appreciate it. Was I right? What an interesting interview, Preston Beckman. And we've had him on. I try to get him on like once a year because he always has different things, different insights, and the business keeps changing. And we here at Hollywood and Levine want to make sure that we stay up with the latest advances in television. You know, it's our duty to you, the faithful listener. Anyway, our thanks as always to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Howard Hoffman, Bruce and Jason Miller, also John Wolfert. If you want to get in touch with me, my email address is hollywoodlevine@outlook.com. That's hollywoodlevine@outlook.com. Haven't plugged this in a while, but I could use a 5-star review on Apple. It just helps bring more ears to this podcast. I am on Twitter at Ken Levine. I am on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine. Again, thanks so much for listening. More good stuff next week right here on
Hollywood and Levine.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.